I'm old, I gotta sit down.
I can't. You got it?
It's here. Hi, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's good to be here and privileged to be at an AA meeting. Privileged to be with you guys to take over Peter's spot. He's a great guy, and he's a super guy. And I'm sure he misses being here rather than in crummy old San Francisco. It's a good group out there down there called the Dry Dock Club. Very nice AA group. So in any event, it is good to be here. Drove up here with a couple of guys, and I know a lot of you guys. Seen you at step meetings and step series and stuff like that. And I look forward to seeing you guys in the future. Maybe over here, maybe if they get a meeting over at Zion. We'll finish up that meeting we were doing over at Unity. So it's good to be here. As I said, I'm an alcoholic, and I've been sober since January 25th, 1981. So I've been around here for a while. You know, this deal, I'm going to talk about my deal, nobody else's deal. You don't have to get upset about it. You don't have to do it my way. You can do it wrong if you want. Anything. Hey, listen, I've got my opinions, you know, but they've been road tested, you know. It's like my old sponsor used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. And like most alcoholics, I was a bar drinker, and I used to sit around bars telling people everything I knew. I told them shit I didn't know. I told them, you know, you think you know everything if you're an alkie, if you're a guy like me, arrogant, self-centered, think you know everything. And I think I spent the first 20 years in this deal unlearning stuff. How's that for unlearning stuff? You got to unlearn it. You got to get rid of some old ideas, you know. I mean, I guess the first old idea I had to get rid of is that I could drink. I figure that's the first. I may be wrong about that. I haven't done any intense study on this, but I think that I can't drink has probably got to be a big one. That I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life was unmanageable. Well, that's got to be a big old idea. But I want to let you know that there's some other ideas. There's some other ideas. Well, you know, maybe the next idea after that was, I can't harbor resentments. I used to love resentments. I used to drink resentments. I was like a resentment waiting to happen. I didn't have to go into the outside world to get resentments. I could get resentments in AA. I would turn to my sponsor, my first sponsor, and I'd start talking about all the idiots in AA and everything I hated about AA, and he'd say, "Well, Russell, you must have thought you were joining Well People's Anonymous." So that's another old idea. But, you know, there's a lot of old ideas. You got to work this thing for a long period of time. It's hard to see the old ideas, your old ideas, when you think all your ideas are right. You know how much time it takes to just realize that there may be a problem with an idea you think is right? You know, I used to drink alcohol. Anybody here ever drink alcohol? Now, is this an open or a closed meeting? It was open. So are there any alcoholics here besides me? Raise your hand if you're an alcoholic. Okay. So does that mean you guys go to meetings and you say things like, "My name is so-and-so," and you announce that you're an alcoholic? Do you do that? Do you say you're an alcoholic? You say it and you mean it. You say, "I'm an alcoholic. I belong here. I'm an alcoholic." You believe that. I'm an alcoholic, right? So you don't mean like, "Well, I just became an alcoholic yesterday or the day before," or anything like that. You say, "I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic now. I was an alcoholic last week. I was an alcoholic 6 years ago," you know? You tell your story. He says, "Let me tell you my story. I was born. I was an alcoholic when I was born. You know, I was always been an alcoholic. I'll be an alcoholic till the day I die." Right? You say shit like that now, right? Now listen, there was a time in your life that there was, just like there was a time in my life when I didn't think I was an alcoholic. It was the furthest thing in my mind. How many guys here who are alcoholics once thought that they weren't an alcoholic? How many guys once thought they weren't an alcoholic and it never even crossed their mind that they were an alcoholic, you know? So that was my problem. I used to drink alcohol and the real deal, yeah, because nothing ever worked just as well. Nothing, no woman, no suit of clothes, no amount of money ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. Man, I'll tell you. They say men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented. That's why they drink, because they can't stand sobriety. Sober, they're restless, irritable, and discontented, and unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others take with impunity. So I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have it do for them what it did for me and stop. You just ain't going to do it. No woman, no job, no nothing ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And my problem is that unfortunately alcohol stopped working for me, so I don't drink it. And the real sad thing about my life is alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and I hurt a lot of people. You know, and so like you guys, you know the guys who raised their hands and said they were alcoholics? Those same guys you said there was a time when you thought you weren't an alcoholic, right? As a matter of fact, there was a time where you thought you were an alcoholic and the evidence was starting to pile up against you that you're an alcoholic. I mean, there were probably people that came up to you. And anybody ever have anybody talk to you about your drinking? That ever happened to you? You know, my wife kicked me out of the house because I was a drunk. You know, one time somebody asked me, I was married for 5 years to my first wife, beautiful guy. She kicked me out of the house because I was a drunk, and I'll tell you that story in a second. And somebody asked me once, and they said, did she, I said, yeah, she kicked me out of the house because I said, did she ever mention to you that you had a problem with your drinking? And I said, and I wasn't lying, I said, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't remember ever mentioning to me, you know, even that time we were in the restaurant, I fell asleep in the salad. You know, one would think logically she might have said something about being in the English pub and my falling asleep in the salad, you know, that, you know, maybe I might have a drink. No, I don't think she said anything about that. I don't remember hearing anything. So, you know, so here's the deal. So, you know, the guys who raised their hands said they were an alcoholic, you guys. So there was a time you thought you weren't an alcoholic, right? Right? Okay. And then the evidence started piling up against you, right? Remember when the evidence started piling up? You know, the DUIs, you know, the jail, coming home late, whatever the hell it was, the evidence against you that you're an alcoholic. And people used to, you know, people would come up to me. They'd say something, if they were stupid enough to talk to me, you know, they'd talk to me about my drinking. They'd say something like, well, you know, I think maybe you have a drinking problem. I said, well, I can understand being where you are, looking at me the way you're looking at me, you know, knowing what you know. I'd kill you with the stuff you didn't know. The stuff I'd say, well, you don't know what I've been through. Nobody knows how I feel. Nobody can understand me. I'd kill you with the stuff you didn't know. You know, I said, but I can see why you would think that I have a drinking problem. I say, but let me tell you, he says, I don't have a drinking problem. He says, I drink because I have problems. You know, as a matter of fact, I said, you don't know how many times I've set out to have the whole thing work out great and it's just crumbled in my hands. You don't know anything about my parents' divorce. You don't know anything about my divorce. You don't know anything about my work. You don't know anything. I think if you knew what was going on around me, you'd understand that I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, let me tell you something. My drinking perfectly matches my problems. You know what I mean? So pretty soon, let me tell you something. Pretty soon, my problems are going to go away. I'm going to get that girl back. I'm going to get the money back. And I won't have to drink anymore. So thank you for your help. But why don't you just go screw yourself, you know? And so I didn't have a whole lot of people having heart-to-heart talks with me about my drinking. Because it was like, if you want to talk to me about my drinking, that's okay. But I'm going to talk to you about everything I know about you, including your mother. You know what I mean? So, you know, I didn't have a lot of people. So those people who raised their hands that are alcoholics... At one time, you know, when you say I'm an alcoholic, my name's so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic, okay? And let me see. Well, who's here? So raise your hands again. Let me see. I pick somebody, okay? Okay, this young lady, right here. Right there, you. What's your name?
Lauren.
Have you ever been to an AA meeting? When you go there, what do you say?
I'm Lauren.
Okay, there you go. You see, she just said, you say it because you believe you're an alcoholic? Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So there was a time, Lauren, where you didn't think you were an alcoholic. My point exactly. So there was a time in Lauren's life that she didn't think she was an alcoholic, and somebody went up to her, probably, and started talking to her about her drink. Anybody ever talk to you about your drinking? Okay, now, if Lauren was anything like me, and quite frankly, you know how one of the things alcoholics do, they say unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences. Now, listen to this. I'm going to teach you something now. You know? Actually, the best way to teach somebody is through experience, but I'm going to do my best. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism, now get this, and all its consequences, whatever that means, his sobriety will be precarious, which isn't a good thing. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. How many people would like to have true happiness? How many people would like to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of his existence of which they had not even dreamed, experience much of heaven, have remarkable things happen to him? You know, that's all possible, but you know, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, and of true happiness, he'll find none at all. That's an axiom in Alcoholics Anonymous. So you guys, especially you alcoholics, should be interested in what the hell that means. So what does it mean, consequences of alcohol? Well, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic, one of the consequences of being an alcoholic is if you're an alcoholic, you perforce think that you're different. You think you're like unique. You think like alcoholics don't talk about what's really going on. First of all, they don't have any frickin' idea what is going on. But secondly, even if they thought they might know what's going on, they ain't going to talk to you what's going on. I'm not going to talk to you what's going on. You know why? You know why? Listen, because you wouldn't understand. That's why alcoholics say things. They say things like, I've sponsored a lot of people. You know what they say? They say things like, if you hang around Alcoholics Anonymous and you sponsor people, you know what you're going to hear? You're going to hear them say something like this. You don't understand. You're going to hear that all over the place. You don't understand. Because nobody understands you. Because you're so different. You're so unique. Your problems are so extraordinarily different. And you are so different than everybody else that they wouldn't understand. But you see, what the alcoholic doesn't realize is that not only aren't we different, we're like twins. We're all exactly the same. You know why A works? You know what it takes to do a good AA talk? All you have to do is be sincere. Once you learn how to fake that, you got it made. But all you have to do is be sincere. Now listen, if you're transparent in an AA, if you understand yourself, and you understand who and what you are, and you're transparent, and you tell about yourself, you know why people like that? Because they say things like, holy shit, he's talking about me. They come up to you. You know, they'll come up to me. Women come up to me and say, you're talking about me. You're looking at me. You know why we say that? Because for the first time in our lives, we realize nobody knows how I feel. This guy knows how I feel. He's talking about me because we're exactly all the same, which should scare you a little because that means I probably know more about you than you know about yourself. You know why? Because I've had 33 years to know about me. To see about. Now, there's still things I'm probably blind to, but you know, there's a lot of stuff I've learned about me. And if I know a lot about me, you know what that means? That means I know a whole lot about you guys. I know stuff about you guys that you don't know about yourself. You know, that's pretty interesting. That's interesting. So listen, so the people who raise their hands, they think they're alcoholics, you know? But at a time, there was a time where they thought they weren't alcoholics. You know what I mean? And then there was a time that the evidence was sort of mounting up, you understand? And people went up to them, just like went up to you, and they said, you know, we think you had a drinking problem. And not only didn't they think they were alcoholics, okay, even in the face of the evidence, they yelled at the person or they argued at the person against them. They say, who the hell do you think you are? Mind your own freaking business. I don't alcohol. You don't know anything. In other words, they fought the person. They got up on their high heels and they say, who the hell? They argued against being an alcoholic. Right? Isn't that right? You didn't just say, gee, you're right. Okay, let me go to treatment. The first guy came up to you and says, I think you may have a drink problem. Oh, my God, let me go to Hazleton immediately, you know? You, like, yelled at the person. You said, they're crazy. Are you crazy? Your 18th DUI, your parents are saying, I think you have a drink problem. Say, get off my back, you know what I mean? So we got a bunch of people here who are alcoholics. How many people think they're alcoholics? Okay. So how many, all those people thought they were alcoholics, and one time you thought you weren't alcoholics, right? And now, looking back as you tell your story, being an alcoholic, it's the most obvious thing in your life, right? And you can see it clearly, right? So let me ask you something. I want you to think about when you started drinking. Yeah, and some of you even realize the really strange fact that alcoholism has very little to do with drinking. As a matter of fact, drinking is just a symptom of the disease of alcoholism. Alcoholics drink because they suffer from something called alcoholism. Alcoholism has to do with being sober. It has to do with your perceptions and how you feel about yourself. I mean, listen to me. When you're in the shower lathering up and you got 3 years sobriety and all of a sudden you hear this voice telling you you're a piece of shit and you should be dead because you don't deserve to live, and you look around the shower and there ain't nobody there but you, you know what I mean? That's you telling you of what your opinion of you is all about. That's not coming from like Venus. That's coming from deep inside of you about you, and it colors everything you do. And just because you don't think about that all the time doesn't mean that ain't playing in your mind like music. And you know, some that's as much as you're a part of your alcoholism as the drinking. The drinking's only the symptom. The real disease centers in your mind, not your body. It's deep down inside. And you don't even see that because you're so blinded by the DUIs, you don't realize that you're nuts. Now, some people, most people, when they're alcoholics, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months after they stop drinking, when they're lying in bed at 3 o'clock in the mornings and they're thinking about how their life is over and they're going down the tubes and they're scared shitless and they got 10,000 voices saying all sorts of shitty things about them and other people and they can't stop the thinking and they're going nuts. Somewhere along the line, after you first get sober, there comes a point in time. Didn't there come a point in time? When did it happen for you when you weren't drinking? You stopped drinking. You felt good. And then all of a sudden you realized that you were crazy. When did you realize you were crazy? When did it come upon you saying, I'm not drinking, but I'm nuts? I'm like a whack job, you know what I mean? I got to go to the... You ever say things like, I need a meeting? I need a meeting. I needed this meeting, you know? And you haven't had a drink in 3 weeks. You need a meeting because you're nuts. Because you want to blow your brains out. You know, every once in a while you just want to think about committing suicide or something. It's just like a hobby or something, you know? It's like, you know. So what happens is some of you actually learn after a period of time that not only were you an alcoholic when you started drinking, that you suffered from alcoholism years before you even started drinking. You know something? And you're suffering from alcoholism years after you stop drinking. That has nothing to do with the alcohol. It has nothing to do with the drinking. It has to do with the thinking. So how are you going to stop that deal? How are you going to stop the thinking deal? You know, the thinking, you know what you think about. You think about you. You know, what does it say? It says selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our problem. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate. Above all, we must get rid of this selfishness. How do you get rid of self? When must or it kills us, that God makes us possible. The wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, imaginary shit, have the power to absolutely kill us. We're like nuts. All we do is think about ourselves. So here's the deal. Let me tell you how insidious this thing is. So here you are, the people raise their hands who are alcoholics, right? When you say you're alcoholics, now the first glimpse you had that you were an alcoholic is you went into an area and said, I'm an alcoholic because I'm powerless over alcohol, okay? You had no idea what when you were saying you were an alcoholic, you had no clue as to what you were saying. This is what you thought you were saying. What you thought you were saying is, I have a problem with alcohol, right? That's when you came in and you said, I'm an alcoholic, this is what you thought you were saying. You're saying, I got a problem, I can't stop. Anybody here, the people raised their hands who said they were alcoholic, I want to see whether you suffer from the same disease I did. Did anybody here suffer from the disease where you couldn't stop drinking? I suffer from the couldn't stop drinking thing. You know, I mean... You know what I mean? When you wake up in the morning, you say, you swear to yourself on a stack of Bibles, you're not going to have a drink today, and by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you're drinking. And then the next day, you swear that you're not going to go to the bar, and by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you're at the bar. And the next day, you say, I'm not going to buy any booze. And 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you search for dimes, nickels, and quarters so you can buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti and drink it while you're listening to your LP records, you know, the same song over and over again, you know, Rainy Days and Mondays, you know, or I'm Mr. Blue, or one of those great Alky songs, you know, while you're sucking your thumb and thinking about your funeral and all the gals that are there feeling sorry for you because of the shitty way they treated you and all that sort of stuff, you know. You know, that kind of, yeah, sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like, but you know, it's, you know, that self-pity stuff, that drinking, that self-pity. I love self-pity. I'm a self-pity-aholic from way back. So here's the deal. So you guys who raised your hands and you said, I was an alcoholic, when you first came to AA, you said you were an alcoholic because what you realized was is because you couldn't stop, because after a while you just give up, you say, I can't stop. You can't envision life without drinking. You can't envision life without drinking. You can't envision life. You can't envision keeping on drinking. You can't envision stopping drinking. You're just like, your life becomes a bottle. You're like in a bottle, you know what I mean? How are you going to explain that to somebody? How are you going to explain that to your mother and father and sister and say, why don't you just stop? And he says, I can't. When you're drinking against your will. You're not drinking because you want to drink. You're drinking because you have to drink. So that's the kind of alcoholism I have. So when you come in here, you say I'm an alcoholic. What you mean is I have a problem with alcohol. Years down the road, as you continue this thing and you realize that you're also crazy and that it has nothing to do with the drinking because you're not drinking but you're still crazy, you realize you're an alcoholic because you suffer from alcoholism, which has nothing to do with drinking because you haven't had a drink. It has to do with your thinking. You know you're crazy. You stop going to meetings. You don't start drinking. You start going crazy. That's what happens. You first start going crazy and then you start drinking maybe or doing something else. So here's the deal. So there were a bunch of people that raised their hands and they said they were an alcoholic, right? Because they couldn't stop drinking, okay? And those people... But the same people raised their hands, they said, but at one time they thought they weren't an alcoholic. As a matter of fact, they absolutely thought they were an alcoholic. They would fight people who said they were an alcoholic, right? You remember that? So I want you to think about the time when you first started drinking. By the way, you guys who said you were an alcoholic, you're alcoholics even then. Because alcoholics, it's not what it does to you, it's what it does for you. I remember a guy once said to me, he was a doctor, and he was sponsored by another doctor, and he said to the guy, he said, well, you know, I remember a time when I wasn't an alcoholic because I used to go to the bar, and I'd say, I'm only going to have two drinks, and I'd walk in, and I'd have two drinks, and then I'd leave. So I wasn't an alcoholic. And his sponsor said to me, he says, no. You were an alcoholic even then. He says, what do you mean? I'd say I'd have two drinks. I had control over it, and then I'd leave. He'd say, no. He says, you don't understand, Phil. His name was Phil. He says, only alcoholics say shit like that. You see, non-alcoholics don't say, I'm only going to have two drinks, and then at two drinks, I'm going to stop. Non-alcoholics, you see, what they do is they walk in, and they have a drink, or they don't have a drink, or they have two drinks, or they don't have two drinks, or they have a sip, or they don't have a sip, and they leave. They don't even think about it. Because it ain't no big deal. Only alcoholics sitting there saying, oh, I can only have two, I can only have one, I can only have three, I think I have four, I'm drinking. You're not only thinking about your drinking, you think every day you say, every day you don't drink, you think about how you're not drinking. It's just a major part of your life. So the people that raised their hands and they said they were alcoholics, at one point in time, they thought they weren't alcoholics, even though they were alcoholics, right? We've established that. And all along that time, they kept on thinking they weren't alcoholics, although they were alcoholics. And even when the evidence was piled up against them and people came up to them and said, and pointed out, you're an alcoholic, you have a drinking problem, they argued against the fact they were being an alcoholic. And then one day, they said they were alcoholics, right? So let me see. I started drinking when I was, 14 years old. I came a day when I was 31. Okay, so what is that? How many years? Do you have any mathematicians here? 17 years. 17 years. 17 years through a broken marriage, through all sorts of problems. 17 years. 17 years. 17 years of living life, raising children, going to work. 17 years an alcoholic. And after 17 years, after all the crap that I went through and all the crap I put everybody through, I looked at myself and I said, my name's Russell, I'm an alcoholic. 17 years. So how long did it take for that old idea to go away? How long did it take for that old idea to go away? 17 years. Actually, if you count before I stopped drinking, when I was a self-pityaholic and I wasn't drinking, but I was feeling sorry for myself, I was doing all that other shit, probably 20, 30 years, who knows? 17 years of hurting people and messing up my life. Now I stopped drinking, which solves a lot of problems, right? How did I find out I was an alcoholic? How did I discover I was an alcoholic? How did I accept the fact that I was an alcoholic? Through trials and tribulations and failures and pain. You know, in our 12 and 12, it says in the seventh chapter, it says we learn the value of suffering. It says the way we get a new perspective is by 100 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. How did you get into this room? Because you were riding the crest one day and you won the lotto, $15 million, and you married Brad Pitt, you know, or Angelina Jolie, and you had an incredible life, and you said, holy shit, you know, things are going so great. I think it's time for me to check out Alcoholics Anonymous. No, through humiliation and pain and crap, thinking your life was over, you finally came in here and you said, my name is so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic, right? So that's why you finally got here. Now you stop drinking. Now, how many years do you think it takes to find out you're an asshole? I mean, if it took you 70 years to figure out that you got a drinking problem, how long do you think it takes to find out you're a flaming asshole who's selfish, self-centered, doesn't give a shit about anybody in themselves, and all you want to do is get laid and have a lot of money, and you don't give a crap about anybody, and that you're a worthless, miserable human being? ¿20 years? ¿25 years? I mean, I guess if you have a job and you're making money and you're married or something like that and having kids, you know what I mean? I guess you think you're pretty hot shit, right? You don't need God. You don't need church. You don't need to go out and do service. You can just hang around day meetings and grab all the crap you can get so you can feel good about yourself and try to figure out, spend the rest of your life figuring out how you can be happy. You can go to A meetings and talk about, I don't feel good today, or I don't feel good tomorrow, or I had a rough day today, or I had a crappy life, or I had a rough Wednesday, or you wouldn't believe how my boss felt. You can go to a lot of discussion meetings and talk about your horse shit and make believe you're doing an AA and make believe that you're somehow spiritually fit because you're sitting on some pillow doing yoga or some sort of shit like that. Get some sort of sponsor who loves you and treats you nice like he's your friend and understands you and shit like that. Stay away from those assholes like Russell, you know? Jerks, you know what I mean? Love and tolerance is our code, you know? How long do you think it takes you, like in Ecclesiastes, where King Solomon said, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. It's all about me, 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 and stuff, 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 stuff. And how many guys do you really think actually get the sixth step that separates the men from the boys, where the test is the man is him who tries to grow in the image and likeness of his creator, where it says we don't want to deprecate material things, but, you know, money, power, and prestige are the worst things that ever happened to us. How many years, most people walk around here with their head up their ass, not drinking, thinking they're okay, and all they think about is stuff. They don't think about serving others or helping people, serving God. That's what our maximum service is supposed to be. How many people do you actually think that really try to grow spiritually in here? Or how many people do you think they're just here just to stop drinking? Basically, this is just another bar, just like their old bar was, another cocktail lounge, only instead of drinking martinis, they're drinking coffee and think they're really doing something. You know? If it says, you know what it says? If you don't get rid of the old ideas, they say the result is nil. The result is nil. You just dilettantes until you let go absolutely, until you utterly give yourself over to him. So there's a story at the end of the book. So, you know, these old idea things, they may take a few years, you know. Most people drink again or they live lives of quiet desperation. They're sort of miserable because they can't get rid of all their old ideas. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. I like this part in the big book, this story, He Sold Himself Short, where it says, this latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day as we place the fears and uncertainties of earlier years, acceptance of things as they are as we place the old impatient chopping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills, and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoyed the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my AA years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I'll always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. You know, that's the kind of sponsors I hung out with. It says if you want what we have and you only go any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Those are the kind of guys I hung out with, the guys who are like that, the guys who are involved in serving other people, trusting in God, focusing on Him. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. When you make that decision, the big book says all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, He gives you everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform His work well. Perform His work well. Know who He is. Perform His work well. If you do this, you will lose all interest in your little plans and designs. You'll begin to have interest. Your whole interest will be in serving others. You'll lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. You'll be reborn. That's what AA is all about. That's what this thing is all about. It's not just about stop drinking. Stop drinking is the littlest, smallest, but most essential thing you can do. The rest of it is about growing in His image and likeness and focusing on Him. Now, you wouldn't know that if you hung around AA, because AA has drifted so far. The rooms have drifted so far from its original focus, the read Dr. Bob and the good old timers, that it's amazing. I'm just telling you, it's amazing. You know, I've been around long enough. This sobriety has been road tested. Let me tell you, don't even argue with me on this point because my mind is closed. I've tested this thing for 33 years through the cancer, through the jobs, through the money, you know, through the whole bit. You know, I'll put up my life against anybody. You know, I'm self-supporting through my own contributions. Been married 33 years, have 4 kids, 6 grandkids, and I've tested. This thing has been road tested with me. This isn't a theory with me. This is what I think will work. This is what works. This is about sobriety. This isn't about sticking around for 10 years as a thumb-sucking crybaby. This isn't about complaining. This isn't about discussion meetings. This isn't about group therapy. This isn't about talking bad shit about yourself and other people. This isn't about gossip. This isn't about worrying about money or worrying about things or worrying about the stuff you may lose or the stuff you may get or whether or not you're going to get laid or, you know, whether you're going to find the perfect partner or how you're going to find happiness or any of that crap. This is about the real deal. You know, and really, I don't know who's going to get this or who's not going to get it or whether you like it or you don't like it. You know, I'm just here to state what my deal is. This is my, I'm just exposed. This is just me. This is what I've learned after 30. Believe me, I started out, this isn't the way I thought. You know, I came from Great Neck, New York and, you know, Saddle Rock and Kings Point. And, you know, my whole deal was I worshipped American Express cards and women and all that stuff, you know, and Playboy bunnies and. I thought that was the road to happiness. Get a law degree, set up a law firm, be a big-time lawyer, make a lot of money, blah, 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 blah. That was my plan of action. That was my plan. It didn't work for me. Couldn't stop drinking, lost a beautiful wife, just almost destroyed myself, did destroy myself. So just like in that book of Ecclesiastes, King Solomon learned it. A lot of people learned this. A lot of people in AA learned this thing. I'm sure Peter Marinelli learned it. Peter M. learned it. A lot of people learned this. The guys I'm going around learned this deal, that stuff just doesn't work. The only thing that works is focusing on God. I can always tell a person who's truly given his life over to God because he serves other people. That's what he thinks about. That's what his life's devoted to, serving others, thinking about others. I get these guys that come up to me, I sponsor them. I've been sponsoring guys for 30 years. You know, some of them actually have 30 years, 33 years, you know, and I got guys that come up to me and, you know, they talk to me about all sorts of stuff. And I said, what does this have to do with helping other people? I hope you're going to tell me something about helping other people because I don't really want to hear about you. You know, I don't really care about you. I want to know about what you're doing to help other people. You sponsoring anybody? I get these guys with 10 years and 15 years sobriety and they talk to me about their lives and their problems. I just have one question. How many people are you sponsoring? You know, how many meetings are you going to? How many people are you helping? You know, what are you focusing upon? You're focusing on your money? You're focusing on your bank account? You're focusing on your wife? What are you focusing on? You're focusing on you. You know, that's what this disease is all about. As far as I'm concerned, you're still in the disease. All you're doing is thinking about you. That's the disease, selfishness and self-centeredness. If you're thinking about you, you know, that's like you're not drinking, but you're still involved in alcoholism. It's all about you. It's like that movie, Beaches, what is that? Enough about me. What about you? What do you think about me? You know what I mean? We just can't get away of thinking about ourselves, thinking about our own little plans and designs. That's not sobriety. You know, what Bill Wilson said, he was talking about emotional sobriety, the next frontier. The next frontier, he says, what alcoholism, the real problem is unhealthy dependencies. Unhealthy dependencies, worrying about what you have or what you don't have or what you need to get, all that sort of stuff. All your fear, all your discussion means, all your whining and complaining is all about that. It's all about me, 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 all those complaints, all that stuff. Hey, listen, when you're new for a few months, for a few years, whatever it is, there is a time for there's a time for everything. A time for crying, a time for laughing. There's a time for bitching and moaning. There's a time for complaining. There's a time for whining and feeling sorry for yourself. You know what I mean? And then there's a time to grow up. You know, it's, you know, as you all know, in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Times, before the big book, you know, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You know, their path had nothing to do with reading the big book. When they wrote that in 1939, in this book, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, there were over 100 men and women who had recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. They were already sober. They were solid sober. They were sober for 4 years without reading the big book. And they said, rarely have I seen a person fail, not get what we have, who has thoroughly followed our path. And their path was reading the Bible. I don't really give a crap whether that bothers you or not. As a matter of fact, if it bothers you, you ought to look into it. Because the spiritual axiom here is, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if you're disturbed by something I say, that's your problem. That's a problem you got. If you're pissed off at me, I'm happy about that. Man, I'll tell you, if I'm not pissing off 25% of the room, I'm not saying shit. And if I know anything about alcoholics, when I piss off an alcoholic, that means I won. That means he's mine forever until he drinks or he resolves that deal. And I know what they look like when they resolve that deal. They come up to me 7 years later saying, I used to hate you, but now I love you. I've come around to your way of thinking because I've been road testing this thing and I know it works. Because in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, it says the three books the old timers felt were absolutely essential. That's the word they use, absolutely essential. Anybody know what the word essential means? It means essential. You know what absolutely essential means? It means absolutely essential. You know what the three books that the old timers said were absolutely essential in order for them to get rid of this thing and have what they have? 1 Corinthians 13. Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and the book of James. We're almost called the James Club. Most people don't read those books. You know why? Because they're closed-minded, because they don't know anything about the second step. They only think they know something about the second step. They say, well, I'm not going to read the Bible. It doesn't matter that they said read the Bible. They said it was absolutely, I'm not going to do it because I'm closed-minded. And they make believe they're in AA. They make believe they're doing everything. It says, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path when they're not thoroughly following the path. Now listen, you're entitled to your opinion, you're just not entitled to your own facts. You look it up in the book, you look it up in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, you look it up in the 12 and 12, you're just not entitled to your own facts. Now you can make believe you're sober as you're sitting around thinking about what a piece of crap you are most of the time. You can make, you know, that's why you're striving so much for the stuff and the things, because you need to have the accoutrements to make you feel like you're decent. That's why you need the new car, and that's why you need the new clothes, and that's why you need the new outfit, and that's why you need to look good, and that's why you need all the stuff that you need and you're striving for. You need it all because with all that stuff, you're a piece of crap anyway. That's a tough deal to try to make that whole thing work. You better have the money and you better have all the... And once you get all the stuff on you and everything, it don't work anyway. Ask Justin Bieber. Ask Lindsay Lohan. The shit don't work anyway. All the stuff don't work anyway. That's all why all the movie stars are, you know, shooting heroin up their veins and dying, because that crap don't work anyway. It's all an illusion. And the reason why you don't have the happiness, they talk about this group book, and they say we've experienced much with heaven, we've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence, because you're not really willing to do the hard stuff. You're just willing to go do the easy stuff. Go to the meetings, talk a little bit, have some coffee, and go to discussion meetings and whine and cry about your problems. Rare is the bird that's really interested in doing the real deal in here, because when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. You guys are lucky, because I decided to be nice tonight. I'm in a good mood. You know, James knows. The sponsor, James, he knows what the deal is. You know, so I only say this, you know, I know not everybody's going to listen to it, but one or two people are. A couple people will, you know. Yeah, I never know who it's going to be. Sometimes the biggest idiot, the biggest joker that nobody thinks will get it, and he's the one who stays sober for that. I have no idea how this works. It's a God thing. The guy who's like saying this guy's full of crap and everything and all sorts of stuff, what's that? He's the guy who 20 years later, he says, I hated your guts, you know, but he stayed sober and he ended up doing it. And the guy said, you think you're going to do it? You never know. That's not my job. My job isn't to keep somebody sober. My job isn't to make you get it. You know, my job is not to carry the message. My job is just to try to carry the message. And what that means is I try to be as transparent as possible. And so this may be the worst meeting I've ever done, but it's going to be the best one I can do tonight. And that means I'm going to try to be as honest with you as possible. It's not really being honest when you're talking to somebody and you're trying to filter out what you really want to say because you're worried about what they might think about you. And so I played that game all my life. You know what it says in the big book? It says if you really do these things, fear of people will leave you. You know how you know fear of people will leave you? Because you could talk for an hour and you don't have to run it through the filter of what will they like this or will they like that or will they like me if I say this or not. You can just tell your truth and still feel good about yourself because how you feel about yourself doesn't depend upon what the crowd thinks about you. You're no longer walking to the bar saying, I hope they like me, and having to drink alcohol whenever you're in a group and worrying about what the group will like you, you know, whether you're funny or not, because you feel like a piece of crap, you know, unless you're drinking. Because your self-esteem doesn't come from anything else but your relationship with God. It doesn't depend upon whether other people like you. It's a strength that you'll never know unless you adopt an attitude of faith in God, because you'll never get it, ever, from other people. That's why the big book says you'll never get it from managing your life. You'll never get it from a large bank account. It'll all be phony shit. Because as soon as the money goes, as soon as anything goes, anything's threatened, you won't have it because you never had it permanently. You never had it for good. You never had it really. It was always based on other things, contingencies. That's why it says you can't manage your own life. No human power could help you with your alcoholism. Only God could and would if you sought. And most people aren't willing to sacrifice 100% and put all their eggs in that basket. They're not willing to jump into the pool, take the dive. They just put their little big toe in the pool and then they draw it out again and make believe. And that's the deal. That's how this thing works. Does that make any sense? Anybody understand what I'm saying? Sure. So we'll see whether you do it. That's how we'll see whether you do it. You got to look. It says, if you want, we have, and you only get anything. You see, I followed these guys around. When I went to that meeting at the keynote group, when I was 4 months sober, my sponsor brought me to this meeting. Some guy was talking named Dow Kennedy, and he was giving his story just like I'm sort of talking right here, probably a lot better than I'm doing. And I sat there. I ain't never heard anybody talk like that before, ever. He was talking about his life, talking about himself, and then he left the meeting. I turned to my sponsor. I said, man, that guy was fantastic. And my sponsor said, he's dying of cancer. And I looked at him. I didn't even understand what he said. I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just spoke. Al Kennedy says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. I said, he just spoke. And my sponsor said, Russell, he's dying of cancer. I said, he's got 3 months to live. I said, he never said anything about dying. I'm used to discussion meetings where if you have a hangnail, you talk about it for 15 hours. You know what I mean? This guy was an Alcoholics Anonymous. He did a whole meeting for an hour, never mentioned that he was dying of cancer, was just trying to help other people, talking about how incredible life was and how incredible God was and what a great life he's had and how grateful he was. Never mentioned that he was dying of cancer. 3 months later, Al Kennedy was dead. You know, we have a chapter called Vision for You. Vision for You. I don't know what your vision is for you, man. I'll tell you, my vision for me used to be not drinking. My vision for me is I wanted 10% of whatever that Al Kennedy had. Because I was so worried about dying. I was so worried about every other thing on the planet. And I said, man, how the hell do you do that? How do you do that? How do you die? How are you dying? Every hour I'm worried about my job, money, what you think about me. I'm just living a life of worry. Worry, 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 fear, fear, fear. This guy's dying of cancer. It's like he's the happiest guy in the world. I said, how the hell do you do that? I said, I don't know what that drug you need to get there, but I'd like that deal. And, of course, I didn't know how to do that. But I'll tell you what I knew. I didn't know how to do that, but I knew it was possible. And I followed guys like him around all over the place. figuring if I just sat there and had coffee with him, if I just listened to him, maybe one day, like a virus, it would like come upon me, you know what I mean? And I'd get the answer. And 33 years later, I think I got that deal. I think I figured that thing out, you know? And I talk about it all the time. That's all I talk about in AA meeting. All I talk about in AA meeting is that deal. All I talk about in AA meeting is that. It doesn't matter if it's the first step or the 12th step or any step in between. All I talk about is that deal. See to it your relationship with him is right. It's all about him. It's all about God. That's the whole thing. That's the whole deal. Is the number one deal. You know, that's what it says. It says, trust God and clean house. It says, no man say he wants his family back or any of that stuff back. He says, or he'll drink again. Nonsense. He says, it's all about your relationship with God. He's burned the idea into every man's mind. All he needs is to trust God and clean house. It's all about God. So that's the whole book is all about that. It's all about that. Every step leads up to the 11th step with now that you know God, increase your faith in God, become closer to God, and then go out in the 12th step and tell other people about that deal. You know how little that's being done in AA today? I went to an AA meeting the other day. I went through the whole meeting. Nobody talked about God. They gave a little credence to higher power and a little stuff like that. It's like they're scared. They were like tiptoeing around it. They were tiptoeing around the most important thing in Alcoholics Anonymous because they were scared. You know why? I know why. Because they were scared they might hurt somebody's feelings and they were scared that they might be judged by other people. They were scared of mentioning God in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I understood that because they're alcoholics and alcoholics live a life of fear and they worry about what other people think about them. And most people, and they think that's sobriety. They think it's sober to sit in a meeting and worry about what other people think about you. They think that's sobriety. That's bondage. That's bondage to fear. That's not being sober. That's being scared. As far as I'm concerned, you might as well be drinking. I used to drink because I was scared. I don't need to sit around being scared of what people in alcohol. Why would I worry about you guys? What do you guys think? I mean, you're not paying my visa bills. You know what I mean? Can you imagine being sober, going to all these meetings and sitting around worrying about what the guy next to you is thinking about you? What's that all about? Is that what you want? I want that Al Kennedy crap. I want that crap where you're dying and you just want to help other people. That's the kind of sobriety I want. So there we go. Thank you very much. Nobody drank. We went through an hour.